Jai Srila Bhakti Chara Swami Maharaj ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.
Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sharashate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshatarine. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shibashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki. Did you say something? Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. Hare Krishna. I'm very happy to be here. Nityananda Prabhu was telling me that I was coming after such a long time. And yeah, previously I used to come more frequently. So this temple especially has a very memorable link with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He spent a lot of time here. He took a lot of effort in designing this temple. He got the deity of Kalachanji and then Srimati Radharani. And around Sri Sri Radha Kalachanji, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj developed a very wonderful community of devotees. A leader is known by his followers, and it is very well acclaimed all over ISKCON that Tamal Krishna Maharaj trained his disciples in a very special way. He taught them how to be loyal to Srila Prabhupada, how to be loyal to Prabhupada's ISKCON, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And just as he himself was committed to Srila Prabhupada, he taught others also to be committed in the same way. I had the good fortune of getting very close to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and serve Srila Prabhupada together. During the last year, 1977, Srila Prabhupada went back to India and at that time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj relinquished all his managerial responsibilities, especially in America. New York was his zone and various other zones he had. And he handed over the responsibilities to other senior leaders. And he went to Mayapur just before the Gaur Purnima. I think it was around February. And he just went there to serve Srila Prabhupada. At that time, Srila Prabhupada's physical condition was not so bad that it kind of gave anybody an impression that Prabhupada may leave the planet. At that time, no one really thought that. But somehow, Tamal Krishna Maharaj decided to just go and be with Srila Prabhupada and serve him. And he remained with Srila Prabhupada. Usually, those days, a GBC member used to become Srila Prabhupada's secretary. And they used to rotate. 1 month, 2 months, they used to serve, be with Srila Prabhupada. Then another GBC member would come, become Prabhupada's secretary. But that time onwards, February 77, February onwards, just Tamal Krishna Maharaj remained with Srila Prabhupada. Prior to that, it was Rameshwar Maharaj and then Brahmananda Maharaj. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj came and took over. I was remembering my first meeting with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, or first seeing him. Let me see if I can. This is a book that I wrote recently on my days with Srila Prabhupada. I should have actually marked the pages, that would have been better. One morning, I saw a bright-looking personality walking with Bhavananda Maharaj. There was something striking about this devotee. I just could not keep my eyes off him. Tirthapad was another American godbrother of mine. We used to share one room together. So we were very close. So Tirthapad and I actually were there together, and then we saw this very brilliant looking personality, and his appearance, and there is something about him was so striking that I just couldn't take my eyes off him. Tirthapad, who was standing next to me, said that it was Tamal Krishna Goswami. Quote, "He is one of the most prominent leaders of our movement," unquote. I had heard about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He was a hero of ISKCON. He had joined in San Francisco when the movement was in its infancy and almost right away assumed a leadership role. Since then, Srila Prabhupada had called on him to lead his most important projects. When the movement was growing on America's West Coast, Prabhupada appointed him president of the Los Angeles Temple. When ISKCON spread to England and George Harrison became involved, Prabhupada sent him there. When Krishna Conscious was gaining foothold in India, Prabhupada made him the governing body commissioner, GBC, there. And when Prabhupada experienced difficulties in getting land in Mayapur, it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj who overcame the obstacles and acquired the land. Then he organized the greatest book distribution and devotee-making program in ISKCON, the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party, which was distributing thousands of books and making hundreds of devotees. Just the sight of Tamal Krishna Maharaj filled me with awe and reverence. I offered my obeisances from a distance. In the afternoon when I was with Srila Prabhupada in his room, so I was already serving Srila Prabhupada. During my first meeting with Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada gave me the service to translate his books into Bengali. And those days, although Srila Prabhupada had about 6,000 initiated disciples, and it was very, very difficult to even get close to Srila Prabhupada, I had, because of this service, I had the good fortune of being approaching Srila Prabhupada any time I wanted, because I had the excuse that I had to show the translation to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada wanted that, actually. I used to bring the translation, I read it out to Prabhupada. Prabhupada would correct me, sometimes Prabhupada would appreciate it. And so I was with Srila Prabhupada at that time in his room. One afternoon when I was with Srila Prabhupada in his room, Maharaj walked in and Prabhupada's face lit up with a bright smile. Right away they began to talk intimately. Tamalkrishna Maharaj told Prabhupada that he had relinquished all his managerial responsibilities in order to be with his divine grace and serve him. Srila Prabhupada was very pleased to hear that. Then they talked about the deprogramming issue in America. How many of you know what is deprogramming? How many of you don't know? What is deprogramming? How many of you want to hear about deprogramming? You see, when devotees, when the young Americans started to join the movement, their parents, mainly the affluent parents of those devotees, wanted to get their children back. And one person, his name was Ted Patrick, he started a program called deprogramming. By the way, Ted Patrick was a criminal. He was a gangster. And he used to kidnap the devotees and torture them in the name of brainwashing them, or in order to rectify their brainwashing. The point was, ISKCON is brainwashing these devotees. And so, and this was a major issue, and a big court case was going on in America, and the government was actually in favor of this deprogramming, because they also didn't want the young Americans should become Hare Krishna devotees. So Prabhupada was very concerned about this deprogramming, what was going on. Many, many devotees were just being forced to leave the movement and go back to their parents. Is there anyone who had been deprogrammed here? Okay. So, and it was a big court case going on. So Tamalkrishna Maharaj straight away started to discuss. Prabhupada actually asked him and they started to discuss about it. Then Prabhupada actually wanted Adi Keshav to come. Adi Keshav was also spearheading this battle with the deprogrammer. So I'll skip that part. And who? Oh, okay, right. I see. Okay, so this is the time when I had the good fortune of being with Tamalkrishna Maharaj, staying with him in the same room. Prabhupada gave me the service to translate his books into Bengali. And then, when Prabhupada was in Mayapur, one day he gave me a stack of Bengali letters. And he asked me to reply those letters. So when I finished the Bengali stack of letters, then Prabhupada gave me a stack of Hindi letters. And he wanted me to reply those. letters. And so, and then one day, Prabhupada appointed me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And that was the time Prabhupada told me, and then Prabhupada called. At that time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary. So Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj that he was appointing me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And then he asked me to move into Tamal Krishna Maharaj's room, his secretary's room. So this is then. One morning, after I had taken dictation from Srila Prabhupada and had him sign the completed letters, he told me, "I am appointing you as my secretary for Indian affairs." I was surprised, to say the least. I had been told that Prabhupada appointed only his most intimate and efficient associates as his secretaries. But I was just a new devotee, and he was giving me the most important assignment in his service. I felt both incredible joy and overwhelming gratitude. Srila Prabhupada called Tamal Krishna Maharaj, told him about the new appointment, and suggested that I move into the secretary's room where Maharaj was staying. Tamal Krishna Maharaj put an affectionate hand on my shoulder and said, quote, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada," unquote, and took me to the room two doors down. Like in Mayapur, there was Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada's bedroom. Then next to that, there are two rooms. The one just adjacent to Prabhupada's room was meant to be Prabhupada's secretary's room. But those days, there was no computer or electric typewriter. So the typewriters are manual typewriters. And you know it makes sound, cut, 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 cut. So, and Prabhupada's secretaries used to type all day his letters. So Prabhupada used to feel disturbed because of this sound of typing. So Prabhupada shifted his secretary to the next, that room next to that, and his personal servant. At that time, Prabhupada's personal servant was Harisori Prabhu. So he was staying into that room, adjacent room. And so that's where two doors down, and took me to the room two doors down. The room next to Prabhupada's was to have been his secretary's room. But the typewriter had made too much noise. So Prabhupada has suggested that his servant move in and his secretary take the room next door. There were two beds. Maharaj said, I could use the one at the far end of the room, and told me to fetch my belongings. When I informed my dear friend and roommate, Tirthapad, he was at first silent. Then he told me that he had always felt that I was very special, and he embraced me and thanked me for my association as his roommate. I could see that he was feeling bad, and I knew that I too would miss our time together. It was quite an experience to be close to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Although we are sharing a room, I still held him in great reverence. In fact, he commanded this kind of respect from practically everyone in ISKCON. But he treated me with warmth and affection. I would bow down to him and he would embrace me. He had been my hero even before I had met him. And this closeness was like a dream, one that I had never imagined would come true. Maharaj got up very early each morning, but he refrained from switching on the light so as not to disturb me. When he was in the bathroom, however, he would play tapes of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. That's what he would do every morning. He would go to the bathroom and he would play a tape. Those days there were tape recorders, and so he would play Prabhupada's tape. And he would play tapes of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, and that would inevitably wake me up. I would just lie in the bed, listening to Prabhupada's transcendental voice, until Maharaj was done, at which time I would rise and get ready for the day. Maharaj was extremely regulated and organized, waking up every day at 3 o'clock, bathing, and then chanting his rounds. He would finish all his rounds and be ready to serve Srila Prabhupada by dawn. He organized me also, insisting that I have a specific time for translating, replying to Prabhupada's letters, and attending to his divine grace, but just being around him in case he needed anything, making sure that I always had enough time to work on translating Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Bengali. That's the first book I started to translate, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Rooming with Maharaj was one of my most memorable experiences in ISKCON. He always treated me lovingly, and he trained me expertly to serve Srila Prabhupada as the highest standard I could manage. In his presence, I was constantly learning new and important things about Krishna consciousness and serving Srila Prabhupada. Because of his seniority, I wanted to serve him too, but he always refused. Whenever I tried to serve him prasad, he would insist on me taking prasad with him. If a devotee serving him made a mistake, he would get upset and chastise him, but he never chastised me. When I related my experience to Bhavananda Maharaj, he commented with a smile, "You're fortunate. Tamal is known for his temper. That is why he is called Hot Tamal." Anyway, I can see that he has accepted you as his man. That's what Bhavananda Prabhu is saying. That is Tamal. When he likes somebody, he'll do anything for him. And you are one of those fortunate souls who has won his favor. I was delighted to hear this and told him, quote, "You are also one of those fortunate souls. I noticed what a deep friendship you have with him," unquote. Maharaj smiled and said, quote, "Yes, that's true. We developed a deep friendship from the first time we met. He's a real person with a golden heart. That's why Srila Prabhupada loves him so much," unquote. Later, Tamal Krishna Maharaj told me that he had grown up in Harlem, a rough neighborhood in New York City, where he had often had to confront the local gangs, and that this upbringing had forced him to become tough. But I also saw how tender and loving a person he was, and the way he served Srila Prabhupada was an incredible example. I could see how much confidence Prabhupada had in him and how much he depended upon him. Well, this is one portion I'll just read. It's not related to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, but just I think probably you'll like to hear that. One evening, I was in Srila Prabhupada's quarters, chanting while he was in his bedroom. In Mayapur, how many of you have been to Mayapur and seen Srila Prabhupada's quarters? Yeah, most of you have. Like two rooms next to each other. One was Prabhupada's bedroom and then Prabhupada's office or darshan room next. So Prabhupada was in the bedroom, I was in the darshan room, Prabhupada, and I was chanting. One of us always had to be with Srila Prabhupada, attending him. So that was my time, my shift at that time. So, one evening I was in Srila Prabhupada's quarters chanting while he was in his bedroom. I was chanting quite loudly as if Prabhupada would be pleased to hear me. After a little while, however, he called me in and told me, don't chant so loudly. I was thinking Prabhupada would be so pleased to hear me chanting so nicely. But Prabhupada just smashed me there. Okay, so I'll just go into this part. This is actually this, because I was with Tamal Krishna Maharaj all the time, serving Srila Prabhupada, a good part of this book actually is about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Okay, this is also very... Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada many questions. Some about management and some on spiritual topics. I was amazed at how he would ask them. And I didn't think I would ever be able to question Srila Prabhupada in such a manner. One day I was sitting in Maharaj's office chanting while he was editing letters that he had typed on Prabhupada's behalf. When he finished, he looked up and saw that I had been watching him, and he just smiled. I was already feeling deep appreciation for him, and when he smiled at me, I couldn't contain myself. I said, "You are so brilliant. Whatever you do is so perfect." Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "Why do you say that?" Then I said, "The way you ask Srila Prabhupada questions is amazing, and I admire your intelligence." And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "It's not a matter of intelligence, it's a matter of sincere desire to know something. When you have a sincere question, just ask. And who is a better person than Srila Prabhupada to answer your questions?" I told him about a time in Mayapur when I had asked Srila Prabhupada what the condition of India would have been if Mahatma Gandhi had become a devotee of Krishna. So, Prabhupada had seemed annoyed and commented in Bengali. He commented in Bengali, quote, "If I had a wife, then I could have a son." That he's saying, if Gandhi became a devotee, then what would have been the condition? So Prabhupada answered the thing that if I had a wife, then I could have had a son. Like, it's a big if. So since then I was feeling so bad that what a stupid question I asked. So from that time onwards I didn't dare to ask any question to Srila Prabhupada. In other words, there was no need to speculate. I told Maharaj that I had felt so stupid that I had not dared ask any questions since then, feeling that it would only further reveal my stupidity. Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "Don't ask a question just for the sake of asking. Ask to sincerely know something. That is the art of asking questions. Don't ask questions just for the sake of asking a question. Ask with a sincere intention to know something. And that's a very important thing I learned from Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And that don't ask questions just for the sake of asking. Ask to sincerely know something. That is the art of asking questions." There is another part I'll just read and then we can we were in Rishikesh at that time. On most days, around midday, the devotees would go swimming in the Ganga. How many of you have gone to Rishikesh? Okay. So it's a very beautiful place at the foothills of Himalayas, on the bank of the Ganges. It's one of the holy places of India. Actually, Prabhupada's health condition was quite bad. Prabhupada was in Bombay. And one day, two very important persons came. Sriman Narayan, he was the ex-governor of Madras, and Ramakrishna Bajaj, who was the head of the Bajaj Industries. So, and while they were talking, and when they got to know that Prabhupada's health condition was not so good, they suggested that Prabhupada go for a change. They used the expression change. Like, and they suggested that Prabhupada went to Rishikesh, because it's on the bank of the Ganges, it's a holy place, and it was summertime, so that weather there is very pleasant at that time. And so Prabhupada liked the idea, and they actually arranged for Srila Prabhupada to stay in, at that time that was the best building in Rishikesh, a building right on the bank of the Ganges called Ganga Darshan. So so it is in Rishikesh. Oh, there, at that time, there was, we had a small group around Srila Prabhupada. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, then Trivikram Maharaj, another two sannyasis were there from South America. Biraha Prakash Swami and Pramana Swami. And another devotee who was serving Tamal Krishna Maharaj at that time, Gauridas Pandit, and Jadubar Prabhu was there, and Pradyumna Prabhu. Pradyumna Prabhu was Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor. Just a few of us were there serving with Srila Prabhupada in Rishikesh. And by the time I started to cook for Srila Prabhupada. And so I used to cook, and I used to cook for everybody actually. So I used to cook and everybody used to take prasad. And I used to, after serving Prabhupada, I used to go. Like by the time everybody else went to the Ganga swimming, and I used to join them. And sometimes in the afternoons, we used to go out walking. So this is one such afternoon. On most days around midday, the devotees would go swimming in the Ganga. I usually had to stay back to cook for this, cook for and serve Srila Prabhupada. But sometimes if I went as soon as my service was done, the devotees would still be there. We would walk up along the bank and then jump into the cold water and let the current carry us downstream, all the while laughing like a bunch of little kids. One afternoon when Upendra was attending to Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Maharaj invited me to join him for a walk. We took a winding path through the forest, crossed Lakshman Jhula, the iron suspension bridge that stretched across the Ganga, and followed the road uphill until we reached a boulder facing the river. The midday sun bathed the foothills in golden rays, and the only sounds were the rumbling of the river below, and the light chirping of birds. For a while we just sat in silence, appreciating the serenity. Then Maharaj commented, quote, "You are so fortunate to have taken birth in India. Just by being born here, you are naturally close to the spiritual culture. The West is so degraded, there is no concept of purity there." Unquote. Then I said, I may have been born in India, but I was Jai Shri Shri Radha Kalachan Ji Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj Ki Jai. So then I told him that I may have been born in India, but I was brought up with the conviction that the West was the best. Sometimes I even wished I were born in the West. Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, that may be, but your environment did not allow you to degrade so much. You can't imagine how degraded we were. Then I said, the other day a devotee came to see Srila Prabhupada. He was lamenting how degraded he was. But Srila Prabhupada told him that this was superficial, since as soon as Prabhupada had called him, the devotee had come and joined him. Tamal Krishna Maharaj remembered, yes, that was Baba Bhuti Prabhu. Then I said, you have been sent by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to assist Srila Prabhupada. You are not an ordinary devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made you take birth in America and Europe to assist Srila Prabhupada in his mission to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Tamal Krishna Maharaj half jokingly said, how did you figure that out? And I remarked with a smile, just an intelligent observation. Not only did Lord Chaitanya send you all, but he made all the arrangements so wonderfully for Srila Prabhupada to come to America at a time when the scene was perfectly set for him to spread Krishna consciousness. After the Second World War, America reached the height of material prosperity. But you all, the youth of America, became disillusioned and realized that money could not buy everything. And you started to look for a positive alternative to find real happiness. At that time, Srila Prabhupada came to America. What then happened will be seen by posterity as a divine arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to fulfill his prediction. Maharaj looked at me right in the eyes, his gaze piercing. He did not say a word. I started to feel uneasy, a bit embarrassed, and began to explain, actually, this is not really my own assessment. Sometimes devotees, and he didn't let me finish the sentence. There is no need to apologize. He stopped me. What you said is both correct and profound. Anyway, so after coming here, these memories of Tamal Krishna Maharaj became very, very vivid in my mind. And I wanted to share them with you also. He was an exceptionally brilliant personality and extremely exalted devotee. His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. So Nityananda Prabhu just mentioned that we have a question answer session. Yeah, so should we start now?
Yes.
And before we start the question and answer session, this book that Maharaj read from, we have many copies here. So you can actually take it today. You can take the advantage, Maharaj, maybe autographing it for you. So you can do that at the end of the question and answer session. And also make sure you get some cookies from Maharaj's hand before you leave. Thank you.
I'll be right here if you want to get a book.
Oh, you're right here.
Oh. So, does anybody have any question? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. So nice to have you here. So I have two questions, Maharaj. So first question is, when thoughts and actions of, sense gratification or maya is trying to take over, what have you done and, what do you do? And something which you can share with all of us.
I see. Hare Krishna. Was the sound all right before? I just kept on speaking without it.
A little low. Huh? This is better now.
This is better now? Oh, I'm sorry. I should have asked whether the sound was all right. Well, the question is, what do we do when we get overwhelmed with the influence of Maya and get carried away by the desire for sense gratification? That is a natural tendency of all living entities in the material nature. And the reason for that is our forgetfulness of Krishna. Because we've forgotten Krishna, we came under the influence of Maya, the illusory energy. And the illusory energy is actually provoking us, tempting us to enjoy. Enjoy means gratify our senses and derive some pleasure out of that. But actually, that is never possible. We try to enjoy, but the reality is the more we try to enjoy, the more miserable we become. Because it's like a punishment. Like, have you seen dogs being trained? The dog makes a mistake, it gets hit by the stick. The dog does the right thing, he gets a cookie or a bone. So similarly, you see, this material nature is a place of rectification. Like, we have developed some wrong tendencies, and those tendencies have to be rectified. And the thing is, just like a dog is trained, we are being trained. When we do something wrong, we get a slap from Maya. When you do something right, we get rewarded. In this way, especially when we come across a devotee of the Lord, then we get to know about this reality. That this tendency to enjoy in the material nature is an illusory concept, is an illusory endeavor. The more one tries to enjoy, the more one ends up getting punished or becoming miserable. And the real enjoyment is not here. Real enjoyment is not there by gratifying our senses. The real enjoyment is in being connected to Krishna. Because Krishna is a reservoir of pleasure. So when we become connected to Krishna, then automatically we also enjoy. So this understanding comes only when we come across a devotee. Because only the devotee knows this secret. Those who are not acquainted with the devotional service or the teachings of the Vedas, they think that this material nature is a place for enjoyment. Even the Karmakanda, even the Vedas, the Karmakanda section is actually giving them the prescriptions. You want to enjoy? Go ahead this way, enjoy. But that is simply to bring them to the point of understanding that This is a place of suffering and there is no enjoyment. So the point is that the tendency to enjoy in the material nature is always there. Because the consciousness is being drawn by the senses towards the objects of the senses, and the tendency is to derive some pleasure out of enjoying those objects of senses. But as a devotee, or by coming in contact with the devotee, we get to know that that's not the way to go. Example, a traveler in the middle of a desert who lost his way, dying of thirst, he sees a mirage and he thinks that there is water. But no matter how much he runs after the mirage runs away from him. He'll never be able to quench his thirst running after a mirage. But then comes a person and he reminds him, this is a mirage. By running after a mirage, you'll never be able to quench your thirst. Come, the oasis is there. And he shows us the way to the oasis. And not only that, he pulls out a bottle of water and says, drink it. Right? And that is how we become convinced beyond a shadow of doubt that yes, this person knows where the real water is. So, when the temptations of enjoyment in this material nature is there, we should remember that actually that is just a running after a mirage, illusory. We'll never be able to quench our thirst for enjoyment. But the real enjoyment is there where the water is. And that water is Krishna consciousness, developing a relationship with Krishna. Does it answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So, you have a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for coming to Dallas.
Thank you.
And thank you for the divine example that's your life and how you committed yourself to Srila Prabhupada and your life and who you are. Thank you so much for that. Your book is beautiful. I want to tell everyone I've read it and it's stunning. It's unbelievable. It's a very, very beautiful book. And I know that you worked on it with Tamal Krishna Goswami's brother,
yeah,
Kalachanji Prabhu. And I just wondered if you'd share a little bit of that. What was that like working with him?
Yeah. I'll give the background of this. You see, it was in 1979 when I came to New York. And so one evening, I was invited to go to a house program in Long Island. And so I was asking my godbrother who was taking me there, and so what should I speak about? Then he said, you had so much association of Srila Prabhupada, especially during his last days, so devotees would like to hear that. So that evening, I gave the class on my days with Srila Prabhupada. And while we were driving back, he was telling me how much he liked it, the class. Then he went to the temple and he and those who were present there started to speak about the class. And the temple president next morning told me to give a class on Srila Prabhupada to the devotees in the temple. So that class went on for 3 days, three evenings. Like, then I went to Toronto and Vishwakarma Prabhu, the temple president, he requested, he heard about me giving a class on Prabhupada. And so this is how, you know, like, wherever I went, I started to speak on Srila Prabhupada on their request. And often, you know, this way I used to speak on Srila Prabhupada. But originally I never thought of writing a book. But it was about 3 years back, some of my godbrothers kept on requesting me to write. And so I asked one of my disciples to transcribe those classes that I gave. There were quite a few. There was a podcast also. I used to regularly speak on Srila Prabhupada. So there were quite a few. And this girl actually painstakingly collected all those episodes, you know. It was coming, at that time it came to about 64 pages, 65 pages, typed pages. Then I started to work on that, and it went over 350 pages. Because, you know, when you speak, you don't go into the details. And also when you're writing, you know, many things that come up that generally you don't really narrate, you know. And anyway, so it came to about 350 pages. And then there was a need to edit it. So I spoke to Garuda Prabhu about that. And it was Garuda Prabhu who actually suggested Kalachandji Prabhu. So I told him, why don't you ask him whether he would, because I didn't feel like straight away asking him. And Kalachandji Prabhu responded favorably. And yes, he did a wonderful job. That 350 pages came to 250 pages. Many things were taken out, many things were edited. But one thing he did actually is he insisted that I speak about my past also, which I didn't want to do, like, you know, because I thought that it's about Srila Prabhupada, so, you know, why should I write about myself? But he kept on insisting that, no, Maharaj, people would want to know that. So the first chapter actually came due to his request and gave some background of what I did. So, yeah, that's how Kalachandji Prabhu got involved. And he is an amazing devotee, I'm sure you all know. And the way he edited it is so nice. Like, actually, a few months ago, I came across some quotation from Pablo Neruda, the Chilean revolutionary, actually, Pablo Neruda. And he's actually writing that when I read my writing, I begin to wonder whether it's me who wrote it. So I wrote to Kalachandji Prabhu with that quote. So that's how I feel when I'm reading this book. Is it me? Because, you know, the way he edited it so wonderfully. Thank you. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So we just celebrated the 50 years of ISKCON. So how you see the next 50 years of ISKCON, how we are planning for it?
You know, it's very difficult to predict, actually. But one thing we know, that it will spread all over the world in every town and village. See, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when he says something, that cannot go in vain. Like, it's bound to happen. It's his words. He said, this movement is going to spread all over the world in every town and village. And it's bound to happen. How it'll happen, we don't know. He'll make all the arrangements himself. Just consider, I mean, what he did through Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada himself used to say that this is the greatest miracle that the world has ever seen. Like, people are, you know, eager to see miracles. But this is the best, biggest miracle. And how did it happen? Just see, like, I mean, the sequence of events. You know, Prabhupada made Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in 1922. And he asked him to take up this mission of spreading Krishna consciousness through English language to the outer country, other countries. And Prabhupada took that instruction so seriously that he quit his job. I mean, it was a major step. Like, he was 26 years old, only 26-year-old young man. He was married. He had a son, little son. He had a very coveted job. He was the manager of a pharmaceutical company. And just Prabhupada quit his job just to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master. And then, but then we see that Prabhupada is struggling without success. I mean, just from 22 to 65, it was a continuous struggle for Srila Prabhupada. But then, at the age of 70, he comes to America. How did he come? In a cargo ship. Literally no money in his pocket. He didn't know where he was going to stay. He didn't know whether he'll have any proper food to eat there. In that condition, he comes to America. And then, just 10 years' time, Krishna consciousness movement spread all over the world. So isn't this a miracle? Or isn't this the arrangement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Like, often we discuss that, you know. Had Prabhupada have come to America 5 years earlier, Prabhupada wouldn't have had this success. Prabhupada came at the right moment, when America was just ready to receive him and his teachings. And then we see, like, America, England, France, Germany, Switzerland, Spain, Australia, you know, just started to, you know, it was literally a Hare Krishna explosion all over the world. So, you know, like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has his plan. Now, we have to be willing to become a proper instruments in the hands of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he will make things happen. And who knows, just as he made that arrangement in mid-60s in America, he can create another situation. After all, Krishna consciousness movement has spread in every nook and corner of this world. And now it's just a matter of, you know, like, expanding. It will happen. It will happen. Thank you. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's so nice to see you again. You are here representing the heart of Srila Prabhupada, the GPC body. And my question for you is that we have many parents and teachers here that are involved in raising our children, raising the next generation. Srila Prabhupada has said many times that he wants us to raise the children to become leaders of society. So in your experience with Srila Prabhupada, in your interactions, how does that show itself? What does that mean? That the children of the devotional community should be raised as leaders? What leadership qualities? Thank you.
Thank you. It's a very complex question. Thank you. And I'll try to answer. You see, as I said, it will happen. Krishna consciousness will spread. Devotees will become committed. Generation after generations. And in the beginning stage, there may be some failures. There are various reasons. The movement was very young, and we may have failed. But through those mistakes, we must learn not to make the same mistake. Like, for example, you see, to bring up children, what is the most essential thing in the growing up stage? Mother's love and care. Right? But unfortunately, those days, not that Prabhupada was aware of it, but the leaders, often they sent out the mothers to distribute books or collect money. And the children were neglected. So that's one thing we must learn. The mother's main service should be to take care of the children. And, you know, the more the children get the mother's love, the stronger becomes their character. Therefore, the first element is mother's love. Hari Bhakti Vilas actually says that a child should be under mother's care until 6 or maximum 8. Then it's father's care. Otherwise the boy, will become effeminate if he's too much with the mother. So up to the age of 6, maximum up to 8, the child is under mother's care. And so now the important consideration, both the father and mother have to become ideal devotees. Their behavior should actually influence their children. And then comes, you know, the leaders or the devotees in the movement. Their behavior should be exemplary. So this is how the whole society actually has the responsibility to bring up our children. Generation after generation. We can, you see, I mean, I'll honestly admit, you know, the mistakes that we made in many areas at those days. Not that the best devotees became the Gurukul teachers. The best devotees were sent out to distribute books and other activities. That was a mistake. The best devotees should have been the teachers in the Gurukul, because Gurukul, you know, they had to become the gurus of those children and guide them. So in simple words, I would say that, you know, it is a collective responsibility that we all have, and let's work together towards that, recognizing that our children are the most valuable asset for our movement. And then also get other young boys and girls to join. It's happening, at least in India it's happening. Like hundreds of educated young boys and girls are joining the movement. We started our temple in Ujjain about 10 years ago, about 12 years ago. We started practically just a handful of devotees I brought from Mayapur. But today we have 85 brahmacharis in the temple. And out of them, 30 are, you know, well-educated engineers, chartered accountants, and like that, you know. Like. So the response is coming. The young Indians are joining, educated Indians are joining. Calcutta temple has about more than 35, I don't exactly remember, but it's more than 35 IIT graduates as brahmacharis in Calcutta temple. And IIT is the most prestigious technological institution in India. Like, boys who didn't get admitted in IIT got admitted in IIM, Indian Institute of MIT, yeah, in Boston, yeah. So this, and the thing is, you know, they're, you know, you get the cream of Indian youth are joining the IIT. They're very, very tough selection they have. And these boys, you know, Pune temple has something like, you know, 100 IIT graduates, you know. Right? And these are the cream of Indian youth. It's happening. And when these boys join, you know, they're committed. They're very committed to Krishna consciousness. Here is a boy from Switzerland, Damodar Prasad. 23 years old, and he's committed completely to distribute books, and now of course he's taking care of me. Thank you. Does it answer your question? So you accept it. Now does everybody agree with me that that's a solemn responsibility that all of you have? To bring up our children collectively. Don't just leave it to the parents or to the Gurukul teachers or no. We have to collectively take care of their upbringing. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
There was a question at the back. Somebody raised his hand. Yeah.
Before he goes, Maharaj. One of the things that we're finding, like as we're preaching, reaching out amongst the devotees, there is this feeling that when Srila Prabhupada was here, he was such an empowered personality. And the devotees who joined at that time were so surrendered that people can take to the process of Krishna consciousness because of that. That today the challenges are sometimes there is doubt about the leaders, that the leaders are not as pure as Srila Prabhupada was. There are just more challenges. Society has become more challenging now. You know, we have the smartphones and people are always answering smartphones. They're always disturbed, in a disturbed condition. In this situation, what is your response to people who think that the opportunity to preach and the ability that we have now to preach is much less and therefore the movement doesn't stand the chance that it stood when Srila Prabhupada was here and his disciples, who were so surrendered, as you were saying, were here. Now that we don't see that into the future and so there's discouragement, what would you say to those devotees?
Well, no doubt that, you know, Prabhupada's coming to America was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine arrangement. Prabhupada himself said that, Prabhupada himself also said that his disciples were sent by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sent by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to assist him. So it was a divine arrangement. Prabhupada came and these exceptionally brilliant personalities. Like one day Rameshwar Prabhu, those days he was Rameshwar Maharaj, he was the GBC of good parts of America like LA and also Denver. So one day he was telling that Denver temple needed a temple president. And he couldn't find a single temple president. You know, a single devotee who was qualified to be a temple president. And he commented that we, within 1 year or so, we went, opened temples, and like, you know, like he was saying the same thing. Like when Prabhupada came, when Prabhupada was here, there was such a tidal wave of, you know, spiritual flood, inundation. And that changed after Prabhupada left, you know. And the other thing also is many of the stalwart devotees of those days after Prabhupada left, they left the movement. So there was a major setback. Then there had been various other attacks from Kali. Court cases, this, that. So, you know, in various ways our movement has been kind of, you know, hindered. The progress has been hindered. So, anyway, so, and as a result of that, you know, people are questioning about their credibility, ability, their, so, in a way it's natural. But one thing is that this movement attracts genuinely sincere individuals. And those sincere individuals will take up the mission and push the movement forward. And the leaders of today therefore have the responsibility to attract them, to train them, and make, or rather facilitate them, and make room for them to take this movement forward. Like this is what the leaders of today have to do. Like so many youngsters are, like at least in India I'm seeing that, you know, very, very qualified devotees. And Jai Shri Shri Radha Kalachan Ji Ki Jai. So anyway, let's try our best to help this movement. And that reminds me one incident also. These two people I mentioned, Sriman Narayan and Ramakrishna Bajaj, a few days before Srila Prabhupada left this planet, they came to see him in Vrindavan. Actually, by the time, you know, the word went around that Prabhupada was going to leave this body, leave this planet. So they came to see Prabhupada, and at one point, they actually suggested that they wanted to speak to Srila Prabhupada privately. So Prabhupada told us to leave the room. And while leaving the room, I pressed the record button of the tape recorder. Always, you know, there used to be the tape recorder near, next to Srila Prabhupada. So I just pressed the button. And so later on we found out that he actually noticed, at some point he noticed that this one of them, you know, that the recorder was on. So anyway, so they asked Srila Prabhupada at that time, who would be his successor? And Prabhupada's response was that I'm not going to appoint any successor. I give the legacy to all my followers. Whoever follows will have the legacy. So that is, you know, what Prabhupada's vision was, you know, like, you know, this movement will carry on, you know, through his sincere followers. And we have to remember one thing, you know, as leaders, it's very important. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. You know, like, if the leaders become affected by that, then it's very unfortunate. Prabhupada himself showed, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself showed, the Goswamis of Vrindavan showed, you know, like, what it needs to lead this movement. Mahaprabhu left everything. Goswami's takta turna mashesho mandala patishranim sadatuchyavat. Then we saw Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur Prabhupada, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So, and Prabhupada also mentioned that the purity is the force. What will make this movement spread is through the purity. Srila Prabhupada has shown that, demonstrated that, that one pure devotee, what he can do. Just one pure devotee conquered the whole world. And what is Prabhupada's weapon in conquering? His purity. He didn't have any other intention, any other motive. All he wanted is to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master. Yes, Hare Krishna. They get the mic, please.
He had a question also.
I have a question.
Okay. Yeah, so after that.
Yep. Jai Shri Krishna. I'm born and brought up in India. I did my education. I've visited most of the Krishna conscious temples in Bangalore, Delhi, Mumbai, and everywhere. And I came here to US in search of like my future, like studies, be it career or something like that. Mm-hmm. And now I got married and I have kids and everything like that. So my kid is born here and this is her native place. And I was born there. That's my native place. So my question here is, so taking care of the parents is generally the dharma, right? And taking care of the kids is the duty. So at this juncture, which should be balanced or which should be prioritized? Going back, now my parents are old. So is it going back and taking care of the parents the priority? Or it's making the kids conscious of what is this and bringing into the realm of Krishna? Or like taking care of duty of them?
Well, at least with the parents part, you know, I can relate something from my own experience. You see, when I joined the movement, my father was quite affected by that. And then, you know, I had a heart-to-heart talk with him. I told him that materially, your elder son can take care of you. He's already taking care of you. But what I am doing is going to take care of you spiritually. When you are here, your other son is taking care of that. But what I am doing will take care of you in the other world, after this life. And that convinced him. So, point is, if you really want to fulfill the dharma of taking care of your parents, now that you have found Krishna consciousness, give it to them. How you're going to give it, it's up to you. You figure out. Most probably they're in India, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So consider, you know, like You know, is there anything more precious than this? Krishna consciousness. Tell me. Is there anything in this world which is more precious than Krishna consciousness? Devotion to Krishna.
That's the pinnacle. Right?
Because this will not only take care of your problems in this life, but this will take care of you life after life.
Okay.
So that is why it's very important that people that you care for, we give it to them. And the same thing applies to your children. As you said, your duty. As a duty, you must make them into devotees of Krishna. There is a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that is saying that guru is not a guru, that husband is not a husband, that father is not a father, the mother is not the mother, a friend is not friend, if he cannot deliver one from the imminent death. So I'll narrow it down. As a father, what is the most important responsibility you have towards your children? Deliver them from the cycle of birth and death. And that is available only through Krishna consciousness. So please fulfill that responsibility in both ends. Dharma end and duty end.
It's the balance that's really...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Sri Krishna.
I was along the same lines of Nityananda Prabhu's question about the future and preaching our Krishna conscious movement. Just myself, because of my upbringing and everything, I've always... just always dreamt that, you know, after the grihastha life and everything, I want to be able to be a full-time preaching Krishna consciousness. So I was just wondering what your experiences are with some of the older devotees around the world. Are there people who are thinking like that and starting to retire and start to preach again? I mean, because I think that personally is going to be a good wave also of Krishna consciousness spreading when the older devotees again start to preach.
Yeah, sure. Well, one thing that comes to my mind immediately is recently I was in San Jose, Silicon Valley, and I was giving the Sunday feast lecture, and there I saw at the back one Western couple. To me it seemed like, you know, maybe just some Western visitor, you know, or people who are becoming attracted to Krishna consciousness. Then after the class, I was told that somebody wanted to see me. It was that couple. And then the man asked me, "Do you recognize me?" And then it occurred to me, from when I was close to him, and then I just embraced him, Pushta Krishna Prabhu. And at that time we couldn't really spend much time together, you know, because there were many people around. So I told him that, why don't we meet again tomorrow? So next day, I invited him for lunch, and then we spoke. You see, you knew him, yeah? He was a sannyasi those days, very brilliant. He was also used to be Prabhupada's secretary. And so after Prabhupada left the planet, he drifted away. He actually became a doctor, an orthopedic surgeon. And I got to know that he was considered to be the best orthopedic surgeon in that area. And he had done, somebody told me, the amazing things that he had done that nobody could even dare to or dream of doing, you know, like, I mean, such a brilliant person with such brilliant success. And he now retired. And, you know, like, not only himself, he told me that in that area, he lives in Santa Cruz. In that Santa Cruz, San Francisco, Berkeley, Silicon Valley area, they're about, not so much Silicon Valley actually, like Berkeley, San Francisco, mainly Santa Cruz. He said there are 800 proper disciples. And he said that, and they all want to come back and do something for Prabhupada. So maybe, you know, maybe this is going to be another wave, you know. Like, consider, you know, these are all successful individuals. Like, you know, with all their experience, with all their, you know, expertise, if they come back, you know, now the onus is on us how to open the gate for them and how to make room for them to come in. So, another thing, you know, like in that respect, you know, like I just remembered that often parents express their, you know, concern that children, when they grow, reach their teen, they go their way, they don't chant anymore, they don't have any interest for Krishna consciousness, they don't want to go to the temple. And you know what my answer is? Don't worry. In their formative ages, in the formative years, the dose of Krishna consciousness that you have given them, that will work. They will go, they'll experience this world, they will suffer, and then they'll come back becoming doubly strong. So, you know, like, it'll happen. It'll take its own course, you know, like, it'll happen. Like, and that's why, you know, like, I was just considering, when in their formative ages, you know, like, formative years, say from, you know, 3 to 8, 3 to 12, give them a very good, you know, injection of Krishna consciousness. So that, you know, like, it will remain. Because whatever you gather at that period of your life remains with you forever. And yeah, they'll be allured. Let them experience the outside world. What's the harm? I mean, didn't we go through it and then came to Krishna consciousness? So let them also make their choice. Why should the parents make the decision for them? Leave it up to them. Yeah, you go out and suffer.
We say enjoy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Go out and enjoy. And then see how relishable it is. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
It's so nice to hear you speak. Very, very nice. My question has to do, I work a lot with teens and youth, and also I do have relationships with many of the older devotees, even my own god brothers. Some of them are getting into their 70s now. And the question that always comes up is that there's no stability within ISKCON in America, at least. I mean, in India, you're saying all the cream of the educated youth are coming to the temple. But, for example, one of my older god brothers, he was saying, yeah, I mean, I'd love to preach more, or, you know, take sannyas, or, you know, really focus but they said, but who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to take care of my older wife, you know, my old wife? And if I just walk away from everything, isn't that irresponsible? So that's one group. And then the kids, Like, I'll give an example. I've been working with Chiru Prabhu in Spanish Fork, and he's getting close to being 70. So he wants to turn over his farm and the temple and his festival of colors. And the project's making, like, he's making about $5 million a year net profit with that. But he said for the last 3 years, him and his wife have been canvassing all the younger devotees, younger couples, to take it up. But the younger teens, you know, and the 20-year-olds are saying there's no stability. And he said they'd rather go to college, you know, get a college loan, have that to pay off, and then start in at, you know, whatever minimum pay that they get, and then work for 20 years. They feel more stability in that than him training them and then giving them the keys. And he said they can use the money however they want. So stability, that's my question. You're saying the cream of India is joining, you know, the top educated youth, but what stability are you offering? Here even my older godbrothers say they can't even pay their bills.
Well, the immediate response that comes to the tip of my tongue is that our business is to depend upon Krishna. But at the same time, I also consider that we have to be practical. Like, we can't just say, I mean, if we are that surrendered, then probably we can say, okay, Krishna will take care. But in most cases, you know, we don't really have that degree of surrender. Therefore, there is, you know, we have to be practical. Like, say for example, you know, in one hand, the householders, you know, have to make arrangements. Like, they should consider that, well, someday I'm going to leave home, take vanaprastha and then sannyas. But I have my wife and I have to make arrangements for her. So they have to make a long-term strategic plan for what they want to do. That's one thing. As an institution, we have to prepare ourselves so that when somebody wants to come in and become fully committed, we have proper engagement and proper facilities for them. And as far as that other thing that you said, that, you know, children don't want to take up the business of the parents, they want to go their way. Like, you know, these are, you know, certain, certain freak instances. I mean, if, you know, there is such a thriving business, and who will naturally take care or inherit that? Naturally, the children. And the parents have to have the responsibility to make them understand that's, you know, fine, you want to go to the university, go ahead. Do your studies, do whatever you want. But ultimately, you come and take care of the business. And in most cases, I find that, especially the boys coming from Indian background, they get into parents' businesses. Like in India, I have experience, like one boy, father has a thriving business. The boy wanted to become a full-time devotee, so I allowed him to join the temple. And then the father came crying to me, saying that he is the only son. And so I told him to go back and take care of the father's business. And the father became so pleased that he is giving regular financial, you know, on a monthly basis, he's giving financial support to the temple. You know, like, this is one thing. In India, in America also, one boy, his father has hotel business. He's the only son also. Had a very good job. He's a very bright boy. Very good job. He even got a job in FBI. You know, he's so brilliant actually. But, you know, ultimately he opted for his father's business. You know, his father wanted him. So, main thing is that, you know, in one hand we have to depend upon Krishna, at the same time we have to be practical. Right? And ultimately we know, no matter how many plans we make, you know, all the plans are not foolproof. Who knows what may happen? The thriving business of the father may collapse. The son may have an accident and suffer physical damages and things. And the boys, you know, like who had been so committed to Krishna consciousness, you know, may get into wrong association and start taking drugs. I mean, these are the possibilities that it's beyond our control. But on our part, we should try to do, you know, as much as possible to make proper arrangements to secure everybody in a spiritual life. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari. So it's already 9:00, so we can just give some.